embarrassing. Hello and welcome to Rhymes Against Humanity with Adam Brodsky. We are here talking with Danielle Murali. Is that how it's done?
Yes, it is.
Nice. That's a tough one.
Nice work.
Silent G. I just took a guess because, you know, everybody sees it written. Nobody sees it. You know when you get that that telemarketer call because they're always, Mr. Brodsky? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
be a close
that's how you know.
Call. Yeah. So what do they call you on the phone?
Oh, God. Marigalia, they don't even try.
Anyway, I am here with Danielle Murali. And I once heard Erin McCown pronounce her name, you know, because that's another one that everyone always gets wrong. And
yeah.
So I asked her from the source, and I forget what she told me, but I was doing it for years. And then I heard her say it again, and I swear to God, it was different than what she told me the first time. It was fuck with the straight guy day or whatever. So we are here with Danielle Murali, and we are going to be talking about songwriting and folk singing and singing the blues, and we are going to talk about her early childhood on the Delta of the Mississippi Delta, where she ate nothing but crawfish for years. So anyway, we have a good show lined up. Queequeg, as usual, is here, and she has a guitar that is nice. I have a guitar that is nice. Hers looks like it is possibly nicer and older than mine. So, but it's okay. I am older than she is. So we'll get right to it. Someday I'm actually going to write and record an intro for this.
So you have to keep doing it over and over
again? Yeah, I always think I'm going to write a song about it, and, you know, rhymes against humanity, insanity, profanity. There's plenty of stuff to work with there, but that takes time.
But now they're personalized.
Yes, each one, right. So we're here with Danielle. She is cruising through town, as she quite often does. You are a road hog. You're a road dog.
Road puppy.
I'm nice. How many shows?
Go ahead. What are you getting
at? How many shows do you think you do a year?
Probably 100 something.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not constantly on the road. I get home a lot.
Yeah.
So I do, you know, a run of like 4 dates and then I get home.
But you're constantly going back in and out.
I'm in and out a lot, especially to this area, especially East Coast in general.
Yeah. You know? Do you ever tour the whole place around, get out west and everything?
I do. I haven't really gotten out west too much, but Midwest, you know, some of the middle of nowhere places.
Okay. I used to do the whole thing, but you know, gas was $1.20 a gallon. It was a lot easier to do.
Yeah.
It's you know, those big square states with there's no cities for 8 hours. And then you play to my 3 fans in Wyoming.
It's
so.
I play to your 3 fans in Wyoming,
yes.
Actually.
they're nice guys.
They're great. I like those guys.
Yeah. So 150 shows a year. And what are you driving out there?
A dented Corolla.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's the folk singer's
car. I call
her
Butterface. Really nice from the back, and then the front is all dented in.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew a girl like that. Yes, indeed. So you're what brings you to, of course, by the time this posts, the show that you're playing tonight will be over. So, but still,
yeah.
What is it?
Tonight I'm in Riverton, New Jersey.
Okay.
Playing the Circle of Friends Coffee House.
And that's a house concert deal or a coffee house?
That's it's a house concert / coffee house situation. I'm not even sure. They do different spaces.
Okay.
Sometimes I don't know what I'm going into.
Just
sometimes
show up and strum.
Yeah.
Wherever.
So.
Go ahead. No, I mean, we're here to. Everybody can hear me
talking.
I'm
just
anytime.
Rambling.
Okay. So, well, before we get all started with that, so it looks like since you're in Pennsylvania a lot, you could consider yourself an honorary Pennsylvanian.
Yeah.
Not that you might want to do that, because perhaps someday you might like to buy beer and maybe liquor in the same store.
That would be nice.
It's with the exception of Utah. Every other state in the country can look down on us and say, what the fuck is the problem? I met a guy from Virginia the other day, and he's like, I have a question. Where can I buy a case of beer? I said, well, you have to go to a distributor. And then, okay, can I get a bottle of whiskey? No, you can't. You have to go to another place for a bottle of whiskey. Our boy Rick Santorum, our favorite ex-senator, he's you know Rick.
Oh, I know him well.
Yeah. Well, it looks like Rick's going to run for president again.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's going to Iowa again, and he's like, I thought that the Republicans were going to have to purge themselves of the bad shit, but they don't appear to be doing so.
I think maybe they're just, I don't know, I mean, he's like a joke. He's like a caricature of
himself. You're right.
How do they...
But then each one is more... like.
Yeah.
I have to admit, first of all, I don't know if you know this, I am a registered Republican.
Really?
I am, because in the presidential election in 2012... Watching the primaries was, quite frankly, the best reality show on television. Watching those endless series of you know, like the Republican clown car of primaries,
yeah,
with the cheering for the killing people, and I, you know, as a Democrat, there was no choice. He was running unopposed,
yeah,
which is,
yeah,
the absolute antithesis of democracy. But whatever. So the Republicans, and basically my attitude was, when the circus comes to town, you buy a ticket.
Yeah.
So I registered Republican. However, the Pennsylvania primary is in May, and all that shit gets settled. You know, it's a year and a half of the build up. Oh my God. Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, it's over.
Yeah.
And so it was a done decision, but I got to vote for Newt Gingrich. I got to vote for the giant baby. So that made me feel.
I find it endearing that he thinks that he's going to build a house on the moon.
Right.
It makes me kind of like him a little more than it makes me feel like he's like my, you know, sexist, racist uncle or something.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, what I mean? Exactly.
Who slept around with my aunt or on my aunt.
So but let me ask you this. It's Thanksgiving. The whole family's around. Newt is between marriages.
Yeah.
You think he gets a little creepy with you before the pumpkin pie?
If he's between
marriages.
Oh, you mean when he was my uncle?
Yeah. So what's your?
I mean, he probably wouldn't be like my blood uncle. He would be like,
right? Yeah, married in. So technically,
married in. He'd probably just kind of look at you a little weird, like a little, you know.
Okay, so
hug you a little too close or something.
You think he'd start with? Oh, I was listening to your CD, to your album.
Can you hear my the hair on my arm standing up?
Guy can write some big checks.
I know you have a new mic. Can you hear that?
Yes. I would also like to point out that that Danielle is the first. It was going to be closest to whether she was going to be the last podcast with the old mic or the first one with the new mic, and she is in fact popping the cherry of my Blue Yeti. So so we'll see how the sound goes.
I hope it doesn't cry afterwards.
you'll cuddle it. You'll tell it it'll get better, and then you'll take it out to a diner for chicken fried steak or waffles or something. If I remember correctly, how that's supposed to go.
But it's gonna take like a whole hour, which is kind of special for the first time.
That's true. That's why you want to go with an old seasoned performer and not some punk rock kid.
That's a two pump.
Exactly, fresh off the streets.
Hmm.
So anyway, Rick Santorum is running for president. Probably running for president. You're a lifelong Massachusetts resident.
I am.
So who was your first presidential vote?
I think. Wait, who was my first? My first would have been the one after Clinton.
Okay. Is it because you're a little baby, or is it because you missed a vote?
Because I'm a baby.
Okay. Good.
No. Wait. When? Yeah, I think I never voted when Clinton was in. It was after that. It was the Bush Gore.
Gore.
I also was really.
Which did you go?
Gore.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like taking my chances. Of course, it didn't matter.
I'll tell you what. I did not vote for Barack Obama last time around.
Really?
I voted for the Green Party candidates who are out of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, sometimes that works against.
It was a lost cause.
But it's a good, yeah.
But
in this case, we knew he was going to win by a landslide anyway, so you might as well.
Well, in the words of Emma Goldman, if democracy changed anything, it would be illegal.
Yeah.
So anyways, you are a lifelong Massachusetts resident.
Yeah.
Resident. And you are a pretty blonde girl, so obviously you're a Delta blues singer.
Well, yeah, the deep south of Bear, Massachusetts.
So let's start with this. I was reading a couple of articles online today from branched off of your website, and talked about how you formed a band before you actually knew how to play an instrument as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
That's adorable.
Yeah, well, we went to see the movie. All right, I'm going to admit something really cheesy, but we went to see that movie with Justine Bateman, Satisfaction.
Right.
Do you remember that movie? It was with Liam Neeson and Julia Roberts. It was like one of her first. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of Julia Roberts' first movies. I mean, I was always into music from as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. I always loved music. I loved the pop music of the time when I was growing up. But that movie made us say, hey, we could start an all-girl band when we were 10.
Right.
And I wrote these horrible, you know, these just horrible pop songs that were like, sounded like they could have been written by like the Jets.
You gotta start somewhere.
Like, you know, one of those, what was that other band? I don't know. There were just all these cheesy like 80s pop bands at right. the time, like pop lady singer bands at the time. So okay. I was writing songs like that. Like I had a song called like Something Missing.
Can you give us a little beast?
It was just like Something Missing Inside My Love. It was really awful.
That's a hit. That's I don't rock
Something
it.
Missing with my love and that's you. It was just
it's how old
worst
you?
Thing ever. But it was like 10.
All right.
I mean, I was 24 actually.
Yeah, okay.
But no, it was you know, so we started her father played guitar. And he kind of knew a little bit about other instruments. So I bought a little Casio keyboard.
Right.
My friend Brenda played guitar. We had a couple, we were like, and you're going to play drums and you're going to play bass, even though we didn't even own a bass.
Yeah.
But she was just there hanging
right,
out.
Yeah. Yeah. She's standing there.
We played like one finger Louie Louie, you know, we'd be like, da, 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 da.
I don't know if you know, in this town, Philadelphia, there used to be a Louie Louie parade in the 70s. And John DiBella was the morning zoo keeper.
Yeah.
And he had a Louie Louie parade every year where they would play all different bands and marching. They would and nothing but Louie Louie all day. It was a different time.
Louie 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 Louie
yeah.
Louie Louie Louie.
Right. So that's your little childhood deal.
Yeah.
And then when did you pick up the guitar?
I was probably 13, I think.
Okay.
So that was when I started getting into the, you know,
right?
the long-haired rocker stuff.
Okay. So who were your long-haired metal idols?
Like Guns N' Roses, okay, Skid Row, all those bands.
My sister had it bad for Sebastian Bach.
Oh, God, yeah. Who didn't?
And
he looked
kinda,
like a supermodel,
right?
but with a penis.
You mean like Christy Turlington?
Yeah,
right.
It was like the girl crush that you had on Christy Turlington, you could now bring it over to Sebastian
Bach.
There
you go.
And it had all, he had all of the stuff.
Right.
That, yeah.
I actually ended up re-liking him. My guilty pleasure is I am a tremendously huge Gilmore Girls fan.
Was he on Gilmore Girls?
Yes.
What?
When Lane and the Zach, who moved over to True Blood, formed a band, they put an ad in, like a Craigslist ad for a guitarist, and this ex-rocker that owned a couple of Subway shops franchises.
And
it was Sebastian Bach, and he was adorable.
That
he was
so funny.
He was grown up, he wasn't such a skinny little fuck anymore.
Yeah.
And so he won me over then, because I just thought that I just thought, you know, Skid Row was stupid pop metal for 13-year-old girls. But
yeah. But, well, they were.
Yes.
I saw them open for Aerosmith.
Oh, wow. Oh, right. Local heroes,
yeah.
Aerosmith. Yeah.
I used to do like a New Year's Eve show every year.
Right.
So I saw them the night before New Year's Eve.
Oh, the 30th.
Yeah.
The all, was it an all-ages
December
gig?
30th. It was like the Boston Garden. It was all
okay.
ages.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I remember Aerosmith, one of their shows, the Boston Garden. I remember reading a news article that Aerosmith was going to start wearing... Aerosmith was going to give out earplugs free to people at the show. And they had been... For years, they had been giving earplugs to the roadies and the sound guys and the workers, the concession
yeah.
workers. And they themselves have been wearing them for years. And now they're going to give them out free to the... So that's everybody. And so my attitude was, well, maybe they could turn it down a little.
Yeah.
Which is so not rock and roll.
Like
it down.
Neither are earplugs, except they're very, you know, it's also not rock and roll to be like totally deaf,
right?
From tinnitus, you
yeah.
know, but,
How's your hearing?
Huh?
No, yeah, right.
That was so easy. It's okay. I mean, I've you know been playing acoustic music
yeah.
for the last bunch of years.
Mine's better than a lot of my friends for just that reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember you played the Tin Angel, right?
I haven't played the Tin Angel.
Okay. The guy George, I'm forgetting his last name, but he was the sound guy there about 10 years ago, and he used to be, he was, among his other rock and roll gigs, he was the tour manager for the Plasmatics, Wendy O. Williams.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he has these amazing
Wendy
stories
Williams.
About how his job, when he gets into a new town, with you know, and that's a big punk rock show.
Yeah.
So the first thing he has to do is he has to go to every pawn shop in town and buy every television they have so that she can smash them.
Oh my.
And
oh my
then he
God.
Then he ends up having to, you know, he has to meet weird people in parking lots for drugs, which is also part of his job. So he was doing, he took the Tin Angel gig as his retirement gig. Because it was, you know, acoustic schmucks. You just set the knob and sit back there and forget it. And which was great. And he was, and the thing was, you were getting his sound was usually right on the money. Like, because this was, he could almost literally phone this job in. But he I remember telling me once his high end hearing was so gone that he has to remember when he puts things in the microwave because he can't.
Oh yeah, he can't actually.
He can't hear the microwave beep. So, so he's like, sometimes I'll come back to the microwave 2 hours later. Oh yeah, I made tea. So we should we've been talking. You should play a song.
All right.
Play us a song. Play us something old or whatever you want to play.
Should I play something old first?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like I'm like if you know it, I want to hear something really old. So I'm gonna start at like the roots.
And at the roots
of Danielle. Or just say fuck you. Here's what I'm playing.
I mean, I can play something that's a bunch of years old. It won't necessarily be the roots.
Okay.
But
so Casey just joined us. Danielle Morali is here, and she's playing the first song she ever wrote.
Well, no, I wish if this was the first song I ever wrote, then I probably would have voted sooner. because we've been talking about this Republican left-right thing. I have a theory that just, you know, whatever side you're on, it just depends on which tire is flat. You know, whatever side you lean has to do with.
I'm not following so far. Go on.
So if you're, like, whatever part of you is damaged, that's, you end up leading to the other side.
There we
know?
Go.
So.
Okay.
I don't know.
I like that. So centrist to the only perfect people there are?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you are absolutely sure, then you're probably wrong. That's my
okay. How committed are you to that theory, by the way? See, that's my joke.
See, I'm pretty wishy-washy about it.
Yeah. And she retorts. Nice.
This is based on a conversation I had in a bar that has to do with all that. Where it's fish sticks and flannel, the waitress smokes camels, and the coffee costs more than the beer. I was picking my bone in a self-righteous tone, thinking minds just don't change around here. I sang a Vietnam with a reaper-like charm, code red, counting the dead. When an 8 o'clock shadow with eyes like arrows slammed down his glass and said, you don't know nothing. You weren't there. Till you've had shrapnel under your skin, you couldn't begin. Well, that shifted my tune, because how do you argue with a man who's been on the front lines? I tore my last keynote ticket when a pro-lifer's picket on TV waved their judgment signs. And he cheered them on. He said values are gone, and those women make their own beds. And that's where they should lie. My mouth went dry, and all the blood to my head. I said, you don't know nothing. You've never been there. And until you've had to make that choice, keep your voice in your beard. He said, I can't believe how you last call, lights flash. Jukebox played Johnny Cash. When an ill-dressed man wandered in, he said, "Have you found Jesus? He'll heal all that grieves us if you'd only repent for your sins." And he thumped that black book till the whole place shook as if all of our hope lived inside. And we drank to the wrong, the weak and the strong. We drank to the places we hide, 'cause we don't know nothing, or if we'll ever be there. And until answers fall from the sky, we look for them here. All from the sky, we look for them here.
Nice. That's actually one of the ones I was going to make sure you played anyway.
Oh, thanks. Cool.
I forget. I heard you do that years ago somewhere outside.
Maybe it was a house concert in Phoenixville, the Jim Brand's place there.
Jim Brand's in Jenkintown.
Yeah.
No, because you played inside Jenkintown. There, in the basement there.
Oh, yeah.
So, I remember we did play there. So, do you remember what was the first line of that song? Not the first line that you wrote of that song.
It probably was the "you don't know nothing" part of it.
Okay.
Because I think the first draft was like, "I don't know nothing." I don't know anything. It was like that kind of thing where I was thinking about... It's one of those things, it's like, you know, sometimes songs just flow really quickly, and then sometimes it's like you're picking up little pieces of it as you live.
Right.
You might have an idea, and then you have to have this, like, you realize you've been kind of trying to write this song, and then something happens that makes it happen.
Right.
That actually breaks it open and makes it come. But that sounded really weird, but...
Now you're a 13-year-old boy.
So I had that idea, and I, you know, it was a perfect example of like, I don't know anything, and okay, no, that's not it. That kind of thing, you know? And then I was actually at a house concert. I was just as an observer, and I was listening to this guy, whose name I don't remember, and I wouldn't say if I remembered because, but he was doing political stuff that was very... I don't know. It's like sometimes it's very hard to write a political song that doesn't just sound like preachy and like you're really not, you know, unless it's super biting and
right.
It's just what it's like, a Masters of War type thing. Like you have to go the whole way and be angry, or else it just comes off as like, come on, everybody, let's, come on, people who agree with me already.
Yeah, and then you sing it to a hill full of hippies.
Yeah.
That's the part that really bugged me about writing political songs, was that just like, it's just all of us in our little bubble.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's very easy to get that stuff across. And I like the idea of sort of like sneaking it in there and making someone believe something they did. I mean, I know you're not going to necessarily change someone's mind about something, but I like kind of like going like, hey.
Dropping the ocean, yeah.
Just gently massaging that view into them. But it's like that with this, I was listening to this guy go off about, you know, do these songs, and I was thinking, he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Was he singing left wing songs?
It was left wing stuff, okay. But it was like, it was just about, there's a thing where, you know, folk singers will sing about things that they've never experienced.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. And I'm not saying that you can't write a story song about something that you didn't experience. But let's face it, most folk singers have not been in a coal mine. Okay?
That is the saddest part, is that they haven't. It'd be a much better world. If everybody had to do 2 years
in a coal
mine.
If everybody had to, then yeah.
Yeah, like service
they'd
in
come
Israel.
Out and be like, I don't want to write songs.
You could put some skin in the game.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. And so that's what kind of broke this song open for me. I was like, then I also heard a guy, I was playing a lot of bars at the time. And I was playing a bar in Mansfield, Mass. And it was a little bit of a dive place. And, you know, a bunch of casts of characters would come through there. And I heard a guy talking about Oliver Stone. And he was talking to this other guy, and this guy was like, oh, did you see Born on the 4th of July? Which I love that movie. But he was like, Oliver Stone doesn't know what he's talking about. He wasn't in Vietnam. I was in Vietnam. And he was going on about that. And that was another thing that burst open another right. part of the song. So, yeah.
Okay. I was wrong. I thought she was driving down the road, and she said, fish sticks and flannel. And she's like, pull it over. Because that's one of those ones that dings in your head. And sometimes... You know, you're writing a song, and sometimes you're driving in the car, and you get that killer line. You're like, that's a killer yeah. line. I should put in the work.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get the chorus, and when you're writing the song, you'll come across, as you're writing it, you'll actually end up writing something super clever.
Yeah.
Not because you it just came out of the sky, because you're sitting down and doing the work, and it happened. And that's yeah. always, it feels good. People are going to think that's the line.
Do you ever have it where you have a really great line or a really great part, and then the rest of the song doesn't live up to that one part?
Yeah, I have only about 100 times.
Yeah. But you're like, damn it, I can't.
Well, those are
the
ones. Do you keep those in your notebook to cannibalize later?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was with Steph Hayes a couple of weeks ago. I was talking right here about how, you know, sometimes you don't know.
Yeah.
And you get so excited to play your new song, and you stand up on stage, and a verse in for the first time in front of people is when you realize, this is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I have to sing 3 more verses.
Yeah. Or have you ever done it like where you've spent a whole day on it and you, at the end of the day, you're like, this is wonderful. It's so, you're all excited about it. And then you look at it the next day and you go, oh God, that was a waste
right?
of day. I should have just watched TV.
No, though, because it's because of the muscle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, somebody actually had a formula in his life, but you write the shitty ones, you work hard at the shitty ones so the good ones feel like a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do the push-ups so you can carry the...
Exactly. But how many think you've written? How many songs you've written?
I don't know. I would like to say it's like in the hundreds, but it's not even close. It's probably like 50.
Okay.
Maybe. And a lot of those are horrible.
And if I said to you, I am going to stand up on this stage and sing me every song of yours that you can, and when you're done, I'm going to punch you square in the face, how long would it be before you got whacked?
All the ones that I could remember.
All the ones that you could remember that you wrote.
I could probably do like 3 hours.
3 hours.
Maybe right. 2. Maybe 2.5.
All right. Excellent.
I might try to prolong it so I wouldn't
That's what I'm saying. I want there to be stakes.
I'd be like, all right, I might be able to remember something missing about my love. Okay.
So that obviously that was, I mean, even if you stretch the term, it was blues-y. But that wasn't a blues
song. It's more of a folk. That's probably the folkiest song that I have, actually. Yeah.
That's probably why I liked it. But, Cry.
Mm-hmm.
That's bluesy, right?
Yeah.
Sing me Cry.
You want to hear that one?
Yeah. Is that old?
It's pretty old. It's older than, a little older than that one, actually.
Okay. And when we say old, what are we talking about? 2000?
Well, I put this recording out in like 2005. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Getting old.
All right. In the first
it's in third
Bush
grade.
Administration, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, that was a fruitful time for writing, actually. Obama hasn't really given me a lot to write about.
I think that there's...
I know, maybe I'm just in denial or something, but...
Well, it's tough to write songs about how you're disappointed with your with your unicorn.
Yeah.
We wanted a unicorn, we got a unicorn.
Did you write a song about being disappointed with your unicorn?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
I want to hear that one.
I don't know the words to it, but it didn't come out well, but it was a great idea.
What do you do
when your unicorn just turns out to be a horse with glue and something? I don't
know. All right.
Okay.
That's how I like to start all the songs. All right. Okay.
If I must.
Around me getting old. Some are trying to sleep, read the people watch TV, and I'm making too much noise. When I cry out loud, you dress me up to show your pride. Wrapped in a red, white, and blue quilt, my bowl filled with holy guilt. Read me a story and leave the bad parts out. When I cry out loud, you pat my back and cradle me face down. I spit up and make those colors run, and you spank me in front of everyone and say, if you don't like it, then get out. I feed, but I got this big voice, and it's my only choice to express a few essential needs. So I cry out loud, falling from a broken bough. But soon I learned to talk, walk, invest in some good stock, and I'll buy some land and build myself a house. Buy some land and build myself a house. Buy some land and build myself a house.
Very nice. Now, I remember when I was a young kid, I thought that I, in my bedroom, had invented antifolk. I didn't know what it was called then, but I was like, I am the first, most brilliantest guy in the world. I am combining the perfect elements, the similar elements of punk rock, the DIY ethos, and folk music. I am finding that intersection, and I am the only person to ever do this. And I go up to John and Peter's in, I don't know if you ever played John and Peter's in New Hope?
No.
It's probably not worth playing now, but there was a time when it was.
Yeah.
And it was it was my first open stage, and I would play there. And I went up to the open mic, and these kids had come down. This band called The Humans, or two brothers. They sort of dressed like Hasidic Jews, even though they weren't. That was they dressed like the Blues Brothers, I guess.
Yeah.
And they saw me play, and I saw them play, and then they told me about the whole New York scene, the antifolk scene, yeah, up in New York with Latch, yeah, and everything. Have you ever played the Fort?
I never did. I played the another place that he booked at one point.
Okay.
Like,
okay. Cool. Was the C-Note, or
it's like the rising something.
Yes, yes. The Raven,
Rise,
the Rising
Cafe.
Yeah. Latch always
had somebody's CDs over.
Latch is living in Scotland now. Right. Yeah.
That's what I remember about.
Really? You remember?
I had to leave early, and of then course. I knocked somebody because I had a friend with me and wanted to leave, and it was just that wasn't a great experience, but it wasn't his fault. I left. She was like playing a really quiet song, and I was like trying to quietly leave, and I went shh, and I knocked all her stuff off. It was.
That's a big hand for Danielle. Oh.
That was very rock.
Yes.
Very much so.
But I thought I had invented the whole thing, and then they told me that not only had I not invented it, there was a whole scene full of people, and all of the first wave people had already been signed to majors and dropped.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So it was almost over already. So how did you start playing like the blues?
I never thought I was playing folk, so I it just kind of all blended together in one shot, I think, because
okay.
I mean the transition went from the whole hair band thing when I was first learning how to play guitar,
right,
to classic rock, you know. That's when I got really into classic rock.
All right.
Like Zeppelin and Hendrix and the
right.
Stones. I always liked the Stones because that was like one of my first albums, was with Tattoo You and everything.
Right.
But I had these boys who lived upstairs from me when I was little who introduced me to rock music, pretty much.
Well, it could have been worse, I suppose.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I was always into all kinds of music, like
okay.
all kinds of whatever was. You know, I went through the period of like whatever was popular at the moment, like the pop music at
right.
the time. And but pretty much when I started playing music, it was rock music, and okay. then that led to classic rock. I started getting into classic rock, and that's how I ended up getting to the blues.
Okay. You know,
it's just that's what influenced. So I mean, that was influenced by so much of the blues stuff.
And, yeah. Okay.
And especially when I started playing acoustic music, I would hear people doing that kind of.
Right.
You know, that kind of that pick and stuff.
Right.
You know, or even the folkier.
Ah, see. That evokes something in me, right? I start looking for a dollar to put in a hat somewhere.
But that's. And, you know, then I was like, well, where did that come from? You know, and I was like, well, this, you know, Mississippi John Hurt, that's where that,
yeah.
You know, and then the Bill Brunzi stuff, the big heavy thumb stuff that, you know, that those magic thumbs and
okay.
fingers. And that's the stuff that really got me with the acoustic guitar. You know, that's the stuff I love, is that like fingers on strings. Just,
right.
You know.
I didn't learn to finger pick till maybe I was in my 30s. I still am, if I do it on stage, I issue a preemptive apology.
For me, it's always been stronger than my flat picking. Like I feel like I'm just clumsy with a flat pick, you know.
Punk rock, if you come from there, you can just skip over all that bullshit and get to the part where you get the chicks.
Yeah, well that's, yeah.
So, but so you had, matter of fact, so tell me about Mississippi John Hurt.
Yeah.
And who are your blues idols?
I mean, pretty much him and like Big Bill Brunzi,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, and then I like a lot of modern stuff too, like more, you know, later stuff. Like, I mean, Janis Joplin was a huge influence
okay.
on me. And then going back and finding who influenced her, listening to the Bessie Smith stuff
right.
and the Big Mama Thornton.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and then Bonnie Raitt is a huge influence on
go.
Me. And then going back and be, oh, Sippy Wallace, you know, you kind of,
right.
For everyone who you saw first, there's someone who came before them. Who,
okay.
You know, so it was kind of that. That's
so obviously
came,
you mentioned a lot
together.
Of females there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you think you write like a chick? I say that not pejoratively at all.
I don't know what that would mean, but I mean, maybe not like people think a chick. Right.
Okay. Are you ever?
I don't write about menstruation at all, ever.
No, I do. it's a god awful song I wrote in college called Red Wings.
I don't, you know, there's like a, there's, I think, you know, we had that, so, that whole 90s thing where all of a sudden being a female was a genre of music.
Right. Like, and then some genre,
you know, none of these
gay.
Women sound the same. They're different things. They just happen to all be women and they've come up at the same time because women is the thing right now.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, I'm not going to get into like, wah, you know, but.
Go ahead, get into it.
But there's definitely the idea that being a woman in music is its own genre rather than like women are just part of it, and that there's different genres.
I understand what you're saying, but when women play music, there is, to me, there are different. There's a different a backstory as to why, because they're not using it to get chicks. Like,
I mean, some probably are, but yeah.
Okay.
All right. Here's the truth. It's like. I mean, first of all, I just always loved music, so it really had nothing to do with maybe, you know, no matter what, being a female, there's going to be female reasons why you do things, right?
Right.
I mean, to me, honestly, I always had a huge crush on, like, people who played. It was like, you know, Mick Jagger was one of my first crushes. My first crushes were Mick Jagger, John Ritter, and Mr. Rogers, so...
That's,
so it's like that stuff
sense.
Really influences you. You know, I always loved funny people, and I always loved.
Who was the best lay of the three of them?
Well, Mr. Rogers by far. Fred, good old Fred. Let me take that sweater off.
That's then. Right. And the cuddling would be top notch.
The cuddling, and he makes you feel really good
first
about
of
yourself.
All, it makes you are special.
Very special.
First of all, I think you're mistaken if you think he takes that sweater off. He would fuck you in the sweater. And then you would take it off. You would put it on in the morning to go make breakfast.
That's I. All right. Okay.
Out
you're
in
right.
Pittsburgh.
All right. If you. But. I have to get the visual out of my head before I can move on.
It will
to,
never leave.
But that was so. I mean, you know, there was this weird mixture of like when you see like when I would see people like Robert Plant or like Jimmy Page, you'd go like. I want to be with them, but I want to be them.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's sort of like as a female being really into that music, you have this like, you have an attraction to them.
Right.
And you also, and I'm sure men do too. It's like a man crush kind of thing, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
But there, it's like, it's a weird mix. Like I would never have wanted to be a groupie, like who's just some, you know, but I'd want to be a part of it somehow, you know. I'd want to be them and I'd want to be with them and
it
around them.
Is always a like a weird spot for me. Like whenever I see a female whose music I really like and I approach her, if my name doesn't precede me, which it doesn't always, I just want to let her know, I look exactly like the creepy guys that come up to you after shows. But it's actually not like that. I'm a creepy peer. and I've actually seen it happen, like in the, like at first they're polite because they think I might buy a CD or whatever, you know, and then afterwards they'll see, you know, my set later or whatever.
Yeah.
And their attitude towards me changes because it's like, I know, but there was no way for me to walk up to them and be like, oh, by the way, I'm your peer. So this is a different conversation.
I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But I imagine, like, for any woman, I've heard stories. It's got to be hard because, you know, you're up there on the stage looking sexy as hell just because you're on a stage, you know, like, whether or not. And then, like, dudes are creepy.
What?
And you can't...
Some.
Yes. And by some, you mean most. But you can't
some
say...
Some are not.
Yes, occasionally one is not. But I mean, I toured all over the country, you know, and if someone of the opposite sex was into me after the show, that was a good thing.
Yeah, it's a very different thing.
It's
for a
different
woman.
For you.
It is, and you have to be careful on the road too. It's very different, like as far as, you know, I could never do the like just go and stay at people's houses unless I knew them,
right?
Kind of thing, you know, whereas a guy can kind of like
I'll sleep anywhere
a little more, and there's definitely been a little bit of creepy stuff, but it's, knock on wood, it hasn't been super, like,
right.
I haven't felt like, and I have a pretty good radar for that stuff, so,
you know,
I'm super paranoid, like, I will just, if I'm in a hotel and I see that there's a group of guys who are staying there somewhere, like, I make sure that I don't leave my room.
Really?
Like, that's, guys in groups. I had a time, one time in At a microtel in Greenville, South Carolina. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, the worst.
I took a day off and I went there and I thought, well, I'm gonna, you know, take a day off and write and just hang out. And I did. It was a beautiful day. I had a really nice day, just having some time to myself. And I leave the room to go do something. And I as I'm coming back, I see that there's this group of guys, and one has like a shiner. Like, they just, you know, had to get some aggression out somewhere. And sure enough, like, you know, I fall asleep, and then 4 a.m, there's people banging, they're banging on my door. So I freaked out.
Yeah.
And I called the front desk, and they came up, and then a little while later, they were knocking on my door again, and I called 911. And 911, the dispatcher said, "What do you want us to do about it?" So don't ever bother calling 911.
In Greenville, South Carolina.
It's a joke in your town, Greenville, South Carolina.
Nice. Very nice. It's something that never crosses my mind. I talked to some of my female friends, and like only recently have I come to like realize that you know, their burden is, especially the ones living in the city, are always thinking about, okay, how am I going to get home?
Yeah.
You know, I just can't walk across the city without being aware.
Yeah.
And I just get to skip wherever I want. some of my favorite stories are when I was a young kid. You know, I grew up in the suburbs. So my dad's always telling me, you know, the way my dad would explain it, the incidence of violent offenses happening to you when you enter the city past sundown is roughly 100%.
Yeah.
Every time it's going to happen. And so I remember...
Are you born and raised here?
Outside of Philadelphia.
Outside of Philly,
Warminster, yeah. And so I remember walking a Walnut Street 12:30 at night or something like that, and I saw a guy who I thought, okay, this is a person I should be aware of. This is a person about whom I, you know, I just keep my eye on this. And he crossed the street to get away from me. And I was like, God damn! This leather jacket is awesome.
That's when you know. That's I wish people would cross the street. That might be a nice
feeling.
I wish
people would. Like, so if you're walking down the street,
I try to look intimidating. It doesn't work.
And you see little Danielle with her Gibson in her case. Cross the street to get away from her. Yeah, she wants nothing to do.
Make me feel good. Make me feel intimidating.
You ever take any karate?
No, I'm boxing right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Other I mean, girls, not other or people. What's
not
on?
Yeah, just bags.
Okay.
And mitts.
Some sack
you know?
Work.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Yeah.
To what end?
I don't know. I don't think I'll ever want to fight someone who might hit me back. But
That sounds like a songwriter.
I like having a face.
Okay.
You know, I like having teeth and stuff. But I do enjoy it. It's cool.
Do you have
I hate
the
working out.
Those
so
are really straight.
Oh, well, one of them's a crown.
Okay, still, it's good looking set of choppers you got there.
Back when I had insurance. And Delta insurance.
Yeah, before you
quit
your day
job. Back when I had a real job. Yeah.
That's the way it goes. All right. When did you start writing your own songs that you were proud of and started playing out?
Well, I graduated from Emerson College. I went there for creative writing.
Fuckers didn't let me in.
Did you apply
my
to
first
Emerson?
Choice? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because it was communications. I was a comm major, and I'm not even a jock. Biggest mistake of my life was become not being an English or history major, but whatever. But Emerson is where you want to go for communications.
Yeah.
Those fuckers didn't let me in.
Did you write a flowery essay for them?
It was the 30s. Who knows? I don't know.
Did you etch it out?
I did. I sent smoke signals. I sent my four fastest ships. I have no idea. Like, I just remember that I wanted to go in there. I didn't get in there. I got waitlisted at Ithaca and Quinnipiac, and those were also ones. I wanted to go to Quinnipiac because the name and because they always do the polls.
Yeah.
Quinnipiac poll says, and so I wanted to be a pollster.
Yeah.
So, and then I ended up going to my safety school.
What was your safety?
Elizabethtown College, out near Lancaster, Harrisburg. So,
but you know what? You probably owe a lot less in student loans than I do.
That is true. That is yeah.
That's
yeah.
my one regret. And actually, Emerson was the only school that I applied to.
Ooh!
Because
check
I was
out the
lazy.
Balls on Danielle.
It wasn't balls. It was lack of you know.
All right.
It was just and
your
I got in.
Your folks weren't on you. You got a. This is a big deal.
They weren't like that. They didn't. You know. They you were like, hopefully she won't get in, so we don't have to. You know,
that's
for pay
spirit.
For it. No, they were supportive, but it was, yeah, I don't know. We didn't have that kind of thing where there was pressure that way,
okay.
You know, it was just like, cool, you're going to go to school, you know? So I just only applied to the one school. It was the only one that I really wanted to go to.
Okay.
And I got in because I had won a couple of like essay contests in high school or whatever. And I had like a flowery essay that I sent them that was like, the prison of my emotions of blah, blah, blah. It was
oh,
like, you
God.
Know, this cheesy
right.
crap. And, but they bought it apparently. All right. But I also had shitty SAT scores. So
how shitty?
Like,
you
I think I got like an 820 altogether.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
that's shitty.
Really low.
That's like,
yeah.
NCAA college scores, those basketball players.
And I wasn't going to play basketball, that's for
wow.
sure. No, they were pretty low. Yeah.
But you seem like a smart kid.
Well, I'm not test smart. Like, I guess... I'm intuitive.
Okay.
But I'm not... No,
so
I just wasn't...
Is this like a rough upbringing? Could you cut a bitch? Like...
No, it wasn't... I mean, only if I absolutely had to.
Okay, all right. But you're not ruling it out.
I'd rather not cut a bitch. I mean, if we could talk it out...
I'd rather not cut a bitch.
I mean, if you're coming at me or someone I love, I might cut you. But,
okay.
You know... I mean, most likely I'm not going to have anything on me to cut you. It's going to take me
a
while to get my Swiss Army knife.
In a couple of months, I'm
going to
write a really bitter blues song. You'll see.
And I'm going to punch you really, you know, and break my wrist. And it's going to... But, no, so I applied just to that, just to Emerson. And I got in... I keep tapping on the table. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, new mic.
It may be, maybe you can handle it. Who knows?
I got in... because I got into what they call the FASP program, which maybe didn't exist when you applied. It was the Freshman Academic Studies program, which was, you know, like for people who were a little too stupid to get in. But they liked something about you. Like you had a really flowery, nice essay.
All right.
Or you won the Herald Writing to Win contest when you were 15.
All right.
You know, so that's, it was like that.
Okay.
So I had enough extracurricular things.
So you graduated?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did.
And what is the Emerson's actually in Boston?
It is. Yeah.
And so what was the social scene like going to school in a big city for a lad like me that went out where it smelled like cow shit?
You know, I didn't live there. I stayed at home.
Okay.
And I hang out with my friends from Revere like the whole time I was there. And I had a boyfriend that, you know, I just spent all the time, all my time with him.
A sad story.
And that was, I mean, it was just like, I didn't really do what I should have done.
Right.
And I didn't like get really into all the activities of the school. So I regret that a lot. But, I mean, that area is very, there's a lot of arts stuff down there. It's right in the theater district. It's a cool place to go to school. Even if you're not living there, it's a cool place to hang out all day, you know?
All right.
But then, so then I graduated from there. Right towards the end of my graduation, I explosively broke up with the boyfriend that I was with because I lost my mind. I was like, I need to get out and be free. And blah.
Okay.
So.
what did he do something wrong or just was?
No. Well, no. He was just.
Okay. Wait.
He was a little possessive.
Oh, he was. Okay.
A little bit. It was just. It was a little too.
He would cut.
He was a good guy. He wasn't. No, he was a good guy. But it was just. It was just not. It just.
Okay.
So, and I had never really had that freedom of like, you know. So I just lost my mind and so.
That must have been a fun time to know you.
I wish I had known me at the time. I don't remember like the first 3 years of it. But it was, yeah, it was just like, that's it. I'm going to be crazy.
Now we have a history. There would be the Facebook. You could go back and say, oh, that's what happened. Now, but you and I were lived before that era. Now it's just a.
Well, I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Occasionally, I see myself, the things I would say to the people at the table at the bar mitzvah that I was at.
Yeah.
And I would see the video of it and just be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I said that in front of a camera.
Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah, the things that...
It's kids
it's
today.
Not good. I mean, I feel really bad for the kids now who are... I would hope that it would help them have more self-control or something, but
I think they just realized, look, everybody's showing everybody their junk on the...
Yeah, maybe it's just... It's, yeah, I don't know.
It's only a matter... We're going to have a president someday who flashed her tits at Mardi Gras, and there they are.
I'm sure.
Like,
and it's just going to be like, that's the way it is.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You
know, the same way. I hope we have a president with tits at some point in our history in my lifetime. That would be nice. I don't care what she did with them. It would just be nice if we had one.
Careful what you say about that while Michelle Bachmann's around.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Here's my advice for you, by the way. I tried to give it to Michelle Bachmann. If you're ever running for office, if anyone ever says, would you like a corn dog? The answer is no.
The answer is no, absolutely.
No, thank you.
Yes.
You do not ever want a corn
That's
dog.
True.
You cannot win the corn dog argument.
Don't eat anything on camera.
You have to, because
don't
then
even
you look
open
like,
your,
you look, because they, that's the, it's it's part of the fun game, is
eat
they
it
shove
sideways
their local food.
Like a corn on the cob.
Then you're a priss.
That's,
like, you
maybe
can't win.
Maybe you're just smart. Maybe you say, ha ha, you know, you didn't get me, and then you eat it like that, and then they go, she's funny. Like, you just
yeah,
say,
no, like
ha ha, watch me, check me out. You
but
know?
Then they'll take it out of context, they'll put it up on the Huffington Post the next day and here would be my caption. Michelle Bachmann needs corn dog eating lessons from Marcus Bachmann. There is what I would say. So,
but anyway, so what were we talking about?
I don't know. so you graduate. What I'm trying to get to is, at what point do you start writing and performing songs?
Oh, okay. So
take your time.
Sometime within that 3 years that I was losing my mind,
nice.
I started writing songs because I had all this like tortured poetry that I was writing, and then I hadn't picked up my guitar that much while I was in college.
Okay.
It was like occasionally played Bobby McGee at a party or something, but
okay.
Just so,
keep your girl cred.
Yeah, just like for fun, you know.
Now at this point were you playing an acoustic, an electric? What was your own personal?
I was playing electric the whole time I was learning until around that point, and then I was playing more acoustic stuff.
Okay. What kind of electric guitar do you have?
Now I have a Tele.
Okay.
But I think at the time I had a Strat. And
like a cheap Mexican one? Or?
That one. My Tele now is the cheap Mexican one, but the one I had then was a good Strat.
An American Strat.
Like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What color?
It was Black Sunburst.
That's the one. That's the Clapton guitar.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, it was a nice guitar, but I wasn't playing a whole lot at that point. I was just, you know, like I say, playing at parties. I had an Ovation acoustic that I would play.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
I did. It was a celebrity Ovation. No, you know, it was a gift, and it was great at the time that I had it. And then when I started actually plugging in and playing, I was like, oh, this doesn't sound too good.
It's good on camping trips.
Yeah. It's like, that's a strong guitar. That thing
is
like,
no, it is indestructible.
Hammer nails with that thing.
Literally, the way they fix the neck on those is they heat up the bowl and bend the plastic.
Yeah, and that one was a little warped, too. So.
Yeah.
But, so I started going out and doing open mics. I looked up open mics in the area. I was always jealous of people who were on stage singing and playing, and I was like, I want to do that. That's what
All
I want to do.
So where'd you go?
I went to the Kendall Cafe in Cambridge.
I love the Kendall.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was on my 50 State tour. I played the Kendall was the Boston
show.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, Leanne was
yeah, Leanne
used to book
was
that
great.
Place. Yeah, I was so sad to see that place go.
I know, me too. That was a cool space.
That was a beautiful, beautiful room.
I remember Leanne, the first like bunch of times I used to go there to do that open mic, she would... There was no rhyme or reason to it. Like, you just show up. You'd be talking to somebody, like, making friends. And then she put the list out, and you'd be like, you'd, like, elbow the guy in the face to get on that. Because it would just be like, there would be no line.
Right.
You're like, all right. And you just have to, like, jump over everybody to write your name on the list. It was really, like, barbaric.
Yeah, I think the first time I played there at the open mic, and then I was the, I might have been, the open mic might have had features. I think I might have been the feature there.
Yeah.
And then I would get my own nights, and they were. I used to love that place. That was my favorite place to play in Boston.
Yeah.
Mostly because they were nice to me. The food was pretty good, and I could pack the room. So those are the three things.
Yeah, it was like a good, like kind of like a nice intimate.
Yeah.
Space.
What do you think it was? 55, 60 pack.
Probably like 60 or 70.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was these girls from the Boston Science Museum came once.
Yeah.
And they were so they came to see their friend, and they were just so into me, and it were a bunch of cute girls from. The Boston Science Museum. I had hit the jackpot. It was amazing. Then they gave me, the next time I was in town, they took me on a special tour, and they did the Boston, they do an electricity show.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to go in the cage with one of the girls. And,
cool.
And she's like, you can touch this, but don't touch that. All right, so now you're playing, do you remember your first time stepping on stage at an open mic?
Yeah.
Okay, did you play your own songs or covers?
I did my own songs.
Okay, how'd it go?
It went really well because people are so polite, you know? I mean, it was it was like the day, I remember exactly the day, it was the day before Thanksgiving.
Okay, that's a big
November
big drinking
1998.
Night. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. And it wasn't a big list for that open mic, and they actually had, she let you do three songs that night, but I didn't have a third song.
Okay.
So I did two songs.
<Me too.
laughs> And they were my two, like, sad breakup songs. Aww. Or whatever. And I know, you know, like when I listen back now, I'm like, oh my God, I had horrible pitch. I was just...
It's recorded?
I don't, not that particular thing, but like recordings from around that
time,
like little cassette tapes that I
don't
know. Like, ugh, I can't believe I did that in front of people. But if people hadn't been polite like they were, I probably never would have continued, and I never would have gotten actually...
I distinctly remember the first time I played on stage at John and Peter's, I had fun, they were nice enough, and I came back. And when I came back the second time, some woman, this woman, Linda Kane, a terrific singer, came up to me and said that she's so happy that I'm back because she can't wait to hear my songs again.
Yeah.
And it was the first time anyone who wasn't related to me or a close personal friend.
Yeah, yeah.
There was nothing in it for her.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that I can't find a reason. I can't find an ulterior motive for her. I have to accept it as true.
It's a nice thing to, when you first get that little burst of encouragement.
Right?
And it's addictive in a way.
Oh, God.
I mean, apparently it is because we're trying to make a living at this.
Right? But the thing is, it used to be so hard. Now, if I think of something clever, I'll tweet it and I'll check back to see for retweets. It's almost the same little, same hypothalamic protein strand gets squeezed out.
Yeah, it's that part of it is, it's good and bad because it's like you actually get that part of it satisfied in little bursts, and then it's harder to actually write a full song.
Right.
Like I've had moments where I'm like, I better just not tweet this. I better just put it away and like use it for a song or think of it as like that little... You know, we were talking about earlier, just those little things that you collect. And we don't do that as much anymore now. Now we're like, oh, I thought of something clever. Let me put it up there. Oh, I thought
everyone.
Of something cool. So I try to, like, if it's something that's, unless it's about something really current that, like, I'm obviously not ever going to write a song about.
Are you the one that admitted that Blurred Lines was your guilty pleasure? Was that you?
Yeah. And then the more I listened to it, I was like, ugh.
It's like, funny, though.
You know, the first time I was, like, flipping through the stations and I... Yeah, I was like, what is this? And I was just so grooving to it in my car. And I couldn't wait for it to come on again. And then I'm listening again. I'm like, what, domesticate? What? Huh? Whatever. It's good. I was thinking of that Chris Rock joke about like, do you know the joke that he has? He's got it in his routine. He's like, talks about like women, how they'll dance to anything. If it has a good beat, it doesn't matter if it's totally degrading to them. He's like, it'll be like, slap with a dick. And it's like, and she's just like, I don't care. I like the groove. I just love it. You know, it's like, I felt like that. I was like, I'm such a disgrace to my.
You're a groove whore.
Yeah. But now that I'm tired of the song, to be honest, I can.
You ever play with the band at home?
I do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
What gets the butts shaken?
What gets the butts shaken?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we'll do gigs where like dancers actually come out and do like blue style dancing. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, wait, what's blue style dancing?
It's like it's partner dancing, but it's like, it's sexy.
Okay.
And we have a cool scene in the Boston area, and we have a crew of dancers who will come out to the band gigs and actually like partner dance. And there's actually.
You pay them?
No.
Oh, they just come out to
dance. They do it just to have fun. And we've done gigs at the Blues Union, which is like a dance studio where they do a lesson and then they all dance. And it's so cool to like play and have everybody in the room dancing along to what you're playing.
As a folk singer, I can only dream of that moment. I tell you, it was always my dream to play in a titty bar. And Terry Tompkins used to book the Philadelphia Music Conference back when the website. I don't know if you ever played it. No, it probably ended before you started playing. But at one point, at the very beginning of the Philadelphia Music Conference, before Terry was involved, I would play these little coffee houses, and they were doing me the favor. And by the end, so Terry said to me, he said, I got these rock and roll bands playing at Cheerleaders. It's like a gentleman's club, but the girls actually don't take off. Like get down to pasties, they just go down to bikini. Pennsylvania laws are weird. There's all sorts of different depending on what kind of alcohol you're serving. I don't even understand it myself.
You can't get boobs and
no, yeah, you get your choice. Would you rather be fucked up?
You have to go to a
some...
different place for each.
Matter of fact,
one serves beer, one serves wine.
Right, that's true. Oh, you have any Pinot Grigio? No, not with those tits. If she puts on a bra, I can serve you the Pinot. Seriously, I was in. In the mid early 90s, I came up to Boston for a Macintosh conference. I was doing desktop publishing at the time, and we went to is it called the Combat Zone or the Tenderloin?
Oh, yeah.
What's your Combat Zone?
Combat Zone.
Yeah.
It's not really that anymore. It's like totally cleaned up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we went and me and my friend were, you know, we're 24 years old, 23, whatever.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's go to a titty bar.
Yeah.
And we go to a titty bar, and where we're from in Pennsylvania, the girls wear the G-strings and the pasties, and it is what it is. And we walked in, and I just remember seeing this girl's hoo-ha-ha. And I was like, wow, will you look at that? That's something you don't see every day. And you know, then the titty bars make me sad.
It's very sad,
Yeah. I just don't know who's exploiting whom, and it's just sad.
Yeah.
So I don't like to go. I wish they weren't so sad.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I mean, not that I care. I mean, it's not like I'm...
Yeah. That's
know,
our, that's
so
our
sad
cause.
That they're so sad.
Let's make it a happy place.
We should treat them better and make it a... Yeah, like...
Yeah. I got real excited once. There was a movie I saw called Live... I think it was called Live Nude Girls Unite. And it was about this woman that had, in San Francisco, gone on a crusade for... sex workers to unionize.
Yeah.
And it was at this place, the Lusty Lady, which is one of those quarter booths you put the peep show in right? And so they actually got the union passed, and so the girls unionized, and then later the place became owner-operated.
Yeah.
And so they were all profit sharers and everything. And so it was this great moment. So the very first time I went to LA, I said, I need to go to the Lusty Lady.
I need to support.
Right, exactly. It's because of folk music, right? It's purely on a simpatico brotherhood comrade level. So I go there and I put my little quarter in, and the thing comes up, and there's four bored looking girls.
Did they have signs?
Union. And one of them sees the little thing come up, and she walks up and stuffs her cooter up against the glass. And I try and tell her, I'm a folk singer. I'm here because of the unions. I'm trying to work my sign language out. And so she turns around, sticks her butt in my face. They didn't care that I was supporting their cause. And then I think I might
might have touched the side of the wall, and I just left. I went back there every day for a week.
Like, activism is really dirty stuff.
Exactly. So how do we get sidetracked with naked girls? So you start playing the when you started writing songs, were they blues, or is that something that you migrated
they
to?
They always had a little bit of that to them. You know, I was always like a finger picker. That was always like my first. I had some form of finger picking that I was doing, even if it wasn't. But it was like folky pop blues.
Okay.
You know, there was a little blues vibe to it. Yeah.
Okay. And so, have you ever come across like an old school, like hardcore, this is a blues musician, whether or not he's a 75-year-old black man in a suit, but who's just like, what does this white girl from Massachusetts, what is she doing to my music? You ever experienced any of that?
Not right to my face. I'm sure there's somebody saying it.
Well, good.
I mean, honestly, I don't play, like, I'm not like playing pure blues. It's not like
I'm going
out there, you know. I'm not necessarily... There's a couple of old blues covers that I do, but I'm generally just pulling from that music and putting it into a little bit of a different form, I think. Or I'd like to think I'm doing something a little different with it for the most part. So I don't necessarily feel like I'm not out there like singing about, you know, stuff that I really don't know anything about. To bring it back to the...
Okay.
You know, I mean, for the most part. And sometimes I'll try to learn an old blues song and I'll be like, I don't know what that word means, so maybe I shouldn't play this.
Riding my terrapin, what is that?
Or like, I had to look up, I do Ain't No Nobody's Dirty Business. I do that.
Okay.
And, wait, is it that one? I forget. There's a song where it's like, it might be in that song, or there's a song I was learning where there's a line about gonna buy my baby a money muller. And I was like, what the hell is a muller?
What's a money muller?
It's like a grinder, like his baby spending all his money or
something.
Okay,
all right.
But I was like, I had to look it up, and I'm like, maybe I just want to sing that line because I don't even know what it means, and I'll be like a poser if I sing that line.
You know what I would, because, see, I think teachable moment.
Yeah.
I would say at the beginning of the song, listen, here's the song I'm going to cover. You may be thinking, what's a money muller?
Yeah.
Well, I obviously know, but I'll explain it to you.
Yeah.
So you don't have to Google in the middle of my song.
Yeah. So some of that stuff, you know, I just try to make it feel real. So it's not like I don't enjoy hearing other people do things that are just disingenuous. So
right.
I try not to be disingenuous about it. I try to find the parts of it that I do relate to and put it in there like that.
Well, you know? So you say that you had, a ton of crazy breakup songs.
No, not a ton. I had a few when I first started, like, really writing songs, like, that I would play in front of people, you know?
Yeah. What is the most gut-wrenching thing that you play now?
I don't know. I tend to, like, weed out the stuff that doesn't apply anymore.
Okay.
For the most part.
Request stuff you don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, my first recording, I just think it's so cheesy. And
wait, is that just what I requested two off of right now?
No. Okay, I actually that's the first recording I was really proud of, and I'm still proud of it. And I actually don't even, I think there's some songs in there that I haven't written better songs.
Okay.
Since. Which is not good, but that's how,
well,
like,
no,
that's how I feel. Like, different, but not, like, some stuff on there that I'm like, I couldn't write that right now. That's.
Do you have, I don't know if anybody else does this, but when I think of my songs, I think there are a few rock stars of my songs. I'm not sure, like, hits is the right word, whether or not people like them. Songs that I know are friggin' awesome.
Yeah.
There's ones that are good, and there's ones that, ooh, I would not finish that song if I started it today.
Yeah.
So do you have, is that?
Oh, yeah, no, there's definitely some stuff like that I'm just like, oh, that's, there's earlier, like, the earlier stuff, the early stuff, I'll listen and I'll say, well, I was clever with my words. Like, I had that, you know, I was an Emerson creative writing graduate. So I was very wordy. I could put words together in a clever way.
Right.
But the subject matter was kind of cheeseball.
Okay.
You know, it was like about being, you know, being single and, you know, like, just stupid stuff.
Can you do one of those for us? Can you do a song that you think is a great piece of writing about something trivial?
I have one that I could maybe I'll try.
Do as much as you
I'll
can.
I'll try to get through it. This one I actually still like. I think it's a cheesy country pop hit.
Okay.
That never made me any money.
Right.
Maybe $70 actually, because somebody covered it in Nebraska.
There we go. In Nebraska.
Sheila Greenland. Thank you, Sheila Greenland.
Sheila Greenland.
I don't know if I can remember it, but I'll try. My guitar is probably out of tune like this one. I wrote it too. Dipped myself in honeysuckle, went to the club where I knew you'd be. Got a sudden urge for a beer when I saw you at the bar. As I sipped seductively, I thought I felt your eyes on me, but you were watching the man on stage playing guitar. I flipped my hair in your direction and invade your space. Stand so close that I'm the only thing in sight, and I'm dangling the worm right in your face, but you just and then it goes on, like, I keep
That's
trying
cute.
And trying, and at the end I clone myself a bunch of times, and then, you know, dangling the worm right in your face, but you just won't bite.
I like that. I like the reversal of the metaphor.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so but that one I'm still like, oh, that was clever. That could have been like a cheesy hit.
Now, you're legitimately beautiful. Have you ever struck out like that?
What do you mean, like,
I just imagine like that. I have this image of how the pretty people live, and I just imagine that, like, you point and touch somebody on the shoulder and it's game over. You're done. Back in the day,
When I was single, I wasn't. It took me like until I wasn't single anymore. Like by the time I figured out how to do it, I wasn't single anymore, so I couldn't use it anyway. So.
Really? You have to figure it out. Just sit there until somebody comes up to you and then go home with them?
No. It didn't really work like that. I mean, I like to actually have a conversation with someone.
You'll learn fast.
I think I had this thing where I felt like, well, there she comes. Oh, I'm not going to approach somebody. I'm going to let them come to me. But that never worked. Like, if I really was interested in someone, I would just be like, hi. Like, I just kind of like try to, like, that's what that song was about. Just sort of like trying to be like make myself known in front of them without actually being like, hey, you want to hang out? Like, I would
No, because that's turn off. When pretty girls come at you, I'm just like, what's going on?
Is she crazy? Like, is she a
is
crazy
she crazy?
Town person?
Is she?
Or, yeah.
No, yeah. Clearly she wants something other than me. This is not. Because she could do better. This is not...
Well, that's something you should... That's
no, I've been working on that. I've been working really hard, but it's still back in there. We can't all have good parents. They did their best. They were busy.
Well, like, you know, people born after... I would say, like, in the last 10 or 20 years, you know, parents are, like... They make their kids feel really special. Whereas we had to, like, you know...
Right?
Find it...
You're lucky I feed you.
Or they at least told us when we weren't being special.
Okay, so now you're you've been playing some open mics. Do you remember your first gig where they handed, where they put money in your hand afterwards?
I don't remember the money in my hand, but like I think the first couple were probably not really paid. But yeah, actually my now husband was the first person ever booked me a gig. So hey, you know, book me a gig. No,
that is good.
It was like 13 years later that we got married, but we were friends for a few years and we got together. But yeah, he's even more so now, just a very big part of the music scene in the Boston area. So at the time he was hosting an open mic and yeah, I think he booked me my first official gig, but I ended up playing a different gig first, like a TJ's in Malden, Mass.
Did you ever play? There was a coffee house that I can't remember the name of in Framingham. Gosh, I wish I could remember the name of it, because then this story would.
It's the coffee house that my friend Katie Barbato used to run. Is that
really
what you're talking about?
I don't know.
Who,
how many coffee
know.
Houses can there be in Framingham?
There's a new another one now called Amazing Things, which I'm playing on August 17th. Maybe this will be.
Yes, this will. This is going to go up Monday. So,
yeah. But no, it was a Red Door or something like that, right?
Yeah, yes,
yeah,
it was.
Katie used to run that.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So maybe we didn't know each other.
What a connection. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, because the thing I would love about it, it was just far enough outside that you could play there and you could play the Kindle the next night.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was there. I had great fans of mine went to Clark.
Yep.
So I would play either a coffee house at Clark or at the school, and then Framingham, and then Boston, and then I would go up to Portsmouth. Did you ever play the Blue Mermaid?
I have, yeah.
That's fun. The food's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta bring awesome, your own PA, man. which was always a drag, because you know I'm coming from down here with my own PA was a schlep.
Yeah.
But for you, it's a lot less. And then I go. I mean, and I guess you played a bunch of places up in Portsmouth, like the Press Room.
I've played the Press Room. The Dolphin Striker was my regular gig for a long time up
there.
Okay,
I never played there.
And that's like a restaurant bar, but it's like people come there just for the music.
Okay. Oh, cool.
It's cool. It's actually nice. I haven't played there in a while, but that was sort of my last remaining like bar gig that I would keep doing for a long time, because it wasn't. They only had the TV was small. It was behind the bar.
Yeah.
You know? I got to where I was just like, I'm not doing those gigs anymore.
I played this club. I forget whether it was Rex's in Westchester. I think it was Rex's in Westchester. It's kind of a rock club / sports bar on the other nights.
Yeah.
And I played with. It was a great opportunity. So I took it. It was with the Dave Brocky Experience. Dave Brocky's the guy from Gwar.
Oh, wow.
So it was like Gwar unmasked. So yeah. it's his side band. And it was pretty much the complete opposite of Gwar in terms of the stage show. Because, you know, Gwar, they come out with all the foam and everything.
Yeah. What do they look like under all that stuff?
Dudes.
Just regular guys?
Like, dudes. And so it was him and a couple other members of the band. And he played the show in boxer briefs. Like, that was so the complete opposite of the stage. He's like, if I don't have to wear the makeup.
As bare bones.
Exactly. And there was a cool all girl band that was on tour with him. We had a good time. However, it was probably it was the beginning of the century, and the Sixers had made a run in the playoffs further than anyone thought they would.
Yeah.
So the way normally the bar would turn the TV off, but it was like game 6 or game 7 of a Sixers playoff game. So we're playing and facing the crowd, and the TV is off to the side here, but it's kind of in the same room, so we couldn't even see the TV except the people. You know, when people are cheering at inopportune times, like, the only thing you could be doing that's worse than playing music is having sex with people cheering at inopportune times. And it was just, that was the time when I decided I will not play another gig unless, you know, it went into my rider. When I am playing, televisions must be off.
I have no TV policy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not,
not
fun.
You want music, I'm happy to come and play. If you don't, get somebody else or get a jukebox.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a great way to cut my teeth and to get my chops up that way. You know, playing 3 hours at a time in a night was the best practice I could get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know? And then you go someplace, you go to a listening room.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is easy.
Yeah.
I could play one-handed.
Yeah, there's a transitional phase with that. Like, I think everybody should experience it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's definitely, you get to a point where it's doing you more harm than good. But you should definitely, like, I also don't think you should be someone who's only played to people who listen, and where you're like,
oh,
just like when one person's talking, you're like going to be like, you know, like, because you're not going to be able to handle anything if you don't at least experience that.
Sometimes at listening rooms, I see that. I see these you know, giant folk stars, and they sit down and they start to play, and everybody listens completely, and they've got 100, 150 people in the palm of their hand, and they don't respect that, and they just play their songs like they're practicing, and people are like, oh, listen to them go. I'm like, here are people that got off their ass, left the 500 channels on TV, got in the car and found parking.
Yeah.
Tell them a fucking story. Let them into your stupid little life. But don't just play like you're Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Even when Bob does it.
Yeah.
Although these days, if Bob just shows up and sings well, I consider it a victory.
Yeah. I mean, when you have that, that's a different thing, because there's like legend around it and people are just like, wow, it's Bob Dylan. It's like seeing a site, like a historical site or something.
But
point,
I don't think that's an excuse for him to not. I mean, he plays shows that he doesn't want to play.
Oh,
and he fucking phones him in.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's cool.
He does. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I saw Rod Stewart once in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
And a friend had an extra ticket, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And I went to the show, and fucking Rod Stewart brought it.
Yeah, he's a rock star.
Three
That's
different
you realize
costume
why
changes.
He is
yeah,
who he is.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And he sang, I remember thinking, he sang Maggie May, like, this was the song that he could not wait to share with us.
Well, look at Bruce Springsteen. He plays for 3 hours.
Exactly.
My husband just saw Paul McCartney at Fenway. He played for 3 hours.
Wow.
He's 70 years old.
He's
got to play
man.
For 3 hours.
I got it. I just realized the other day that Mick Jagger is somehow 25 years older than me and also 25 years younger than me. When I watch him on stage, I couldn't do that.
Well, and these guys, you know, they put, it's like people paid for a show. Yeah, put on a show. I mean, Bob Dylan was never that kind of a performer.
Oh, that's not, don't say never. Have you heard those old Gaslight tapes? When he first started in the Village.
Yeah.
He
was, yeah, you mean like the bootleg series where he's he talks a lot
where he's
more
Charlie Chaplin. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean as far it's not like he was ever jumping around the stage and
I don't even know about that. When he invented folk rock, he was pretty communicative. He was pretty happy to be a rock star. The guy made a conscious decision that he wanted to be a rock star.
Yeah, maybe he just
But at retreated. Some point along the way he fell in the '80s or whatever, he fell into himself.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, there are people who are just front men who just have it. You know, there's Peter Wolf lives still in Boston.
Okay.
He'll pop in and he'll just jump in and sing with somebody locally.
Have you jammed with him?
I haven't personally, but I've been in the room when he pops in and plays, and he's just sings, and he tears the roof off of it every time. Even if he's just sitting in with someone, he's a fucking performer. He is a rock star. You know, you could feel it when he gets on stage. He just brings it, you know, and I think that's like a gift that's just a special gift that people have.
Okay.
But they also have to make a little bit of an effort for it, I suppose. It's an effort to make people feel like that even when you're not feeling that way.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I know. I used to be good. I would be like, what a shitty drive. What a shitty day. There's four fucking people here.
Yeah.
And then I'd walk off. I'd be so proud of myself. I would completely manufacture a good show.
Yeah.
They have no idea that I want to be anywhere else. I would take super pride in being like a very professional performer.
Yeah.
I was always early for sound check and all that shit.
Yeah. 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 I mean, geez, you know, that's the least we can do.
Yeah. Exactly. It is the least we can do. It is. Plug some stuff. We're gonna start wrapping up.
Okay.
So this is gonna go up on Monday.
This is going up on Monday. So I'll be. I mean, this goes everywhere, so I can just say where I'm gonna.
Or
be.
Nowhere, depending on who listens. Yeah, exactly. If you got a gig.
Hey, you guys. Hey, you two. No. I'm just Mom, I hope you'll come to my show in Framingham, Mass.
Can you put me on the list?
I'm going to be doing actually a pretty blues-themed show with this guy, Mark T. Small, at the Amazing Things Art Center in Framingham, Mass, next Saturday, August 17th.
Okay.
So that's one to definitely come out and check out. And then I'm all over the place. So you can check out my upcoming stuff at daniellem.com.
You should come out and go out to a show and see Danielle. She is well worth it. I don't like much, but I'm not even like a huge blues fan, despite the fact that the reason I got playing music at all was because of Sonny Terry.
Really?
At 13 or 14, I got a harmonica because I loved me Sonny and Brownie records.
Yeah.
And my harmonica style is, and no one else can hear this, but it is so clearly a perfect hybrid of Sonny Terry and Bob Dylan.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so when you play harp, do you ever play straight or do you always cross?
Mostly cross. I've done a couple, I play straight once in a while, but it takes more skill.
No, see, I disagree. Crossing is hard.
See, right? I feel like when I do the cross harp thing, I can just play rhythmically and it doesn't have to be super melodic.
Okay.
I'm super hack harmonica player, but, you know.
Because I play straight because I'm a shitty guitarist, so that's how I make solos, I can make harmonica solos.
Yeah. I'll pull out a line. I'll just write a little thing on it and then I'll just do it. I haven't really played a lot of harmonica lately, but.
So, take us out with. Is there anything else that you want to get across to the people? Anything that you failed to?
No. Just check out. If you go to the website, that's where all the new news will be. I have a bunch of news up there. Like,
who's your blues legend? Who do you want to first? Let's get Starfucker for a second.
Okay.
Who's the famousest person you ever played with?
That I ever played with. I mean, I've opened for some.
Let's go with
people.
That. Yeah.
I mean. Like, not like nobody super, super.
Just name somebody that you were a really cool gig you got.
I mean, I've opened for like John Mayall and the Blues Breakers.
That's impressive.
For Johnny Winter.
Oh, wow.
John Hammond Jr.
So you were backstage with Johnny Winter?
I didn't get to meet him.
Oh, because yeah. I just want to know what he looks like up close. If he's
I saw him up close. He definitely looks. Yeah, he's like
weird looking dude, right?
He's he's like they have. He's definitely he's up there and they have to push him up, but he can play. Like he looks like he's a statue and they push him up and then he's like and he can still do it. You know,
saving it all for the wrist.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Nice. Sonny Landreth, I've opened for. They get like there's. I've gotten a lot of nice openers for like the guitar player dudes, you know, like the big guys.
Right.
John, who else? Robert Cray.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was a big Robert Cray fan back in the day. Yeah.
He was a little aloof, but.
was he really?
He was, yeah, I didn't get to meet him. Aww. But they're, you know, I mean, mostly like people who, music people would know, but not necessarily like.
It's okay. This is a very inside baseball podcast.
Like people's aunts might not know.
People's aunts. So, have you played with Chris Smither?
I have. I've opened for him.
Okay, because
yeah.
that seems like a natural bill.
He's awesome. Yeah.
And so Chris Smither would be your ticket to meet Bonnie Raitt. And I'm just thinking of you.
I did meet Bonnie Raitt.
There you go. Yeah. My problem. My work here is done.
But I didn't get to play with her. I just said, I love your music so much. It's meant so much to me. That's what I did.
did she know you were a peer or she thought you were a creepy fan?
I wanted to be, well... I wanted her to know, but it was just like too fast.
Right.
And then I took a picture with her. I just came off this creepy fan.
Come on, tell.
Well, we got backstage. We got to go to the show and we got backstage. Our friend had, we know her bass player, like as an acquaintance. We know him from
Freebo?
Around town. No, not Freebo. We know Freebo too, yeah. but Hutch, who's with her.
Oh, yeah,
like,
okay.
And he's a really awesome guy. He's a nice guy. He grew up where I live in some
ways. Oh, okay.
So we know him, but our friend Tommy is like even like really close friends with him. So he got us the backstage passes, which was really nice. And we hung out backstage. And by the time she came out, like there was a party back there. So by the time she came out, I had drank and I was just like very emotional. And I felt like an ass, but it was so nice. I got to take a picture with her.
Okay.
And it was cool. But you know, that like weird, unsatisfying, like
yes.
I got to meet one of my heroes and now... I'm really elated, but I also feel really unsatisfied and like I made an ass. Not that she's ever going to remember that she even met me, but... and Tommy was like, oh, Danielle has been keeping music going in my bar for years because I used to run a series back there that my husband's running now. So, but I was like, I wanted her to know that I play music.
right.
I want to be like... Well, yeah, I've been running mute, but I play. Like, I just wanted her to know, but it was just too. It was
Bonnie,
all
I'm a white
awkward.
Girl who plays the
but
blues.
I, yeah.
you slide at all?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit.
So times. How many times are you changing tunings in a set?
I bring two guitars. In.
Oh, okay.
I have one that's in open D.
Okay.
And
okay.
I just,
and that's
I'll
it.
Play slide on that or some a couple of other tunes
which
on
that. My biggest
that.
Stress would be, I would never change tune. I just because if I get caught in where you can't get it in tune.
Yeah.
I just feel like they're going to be, the emperor has no clothes on. We thought he was clever a few minutes ago, but this guy can't tune
that's
a guitar.
That's why I always have a tuner with me on stage, because I just can't, do it under pressure.
No, oh yeah. I have my new stage tuner I got about a year ago is that polyphonic one.
Yeah.
Where it's strum, you just strum the open. Oh, it's really
cool.
Oh,
yeah?
Yeah, you strum an open, and it'll tell you which are in and which are out.
Oh, my God.
And then you pluck, oh, the D's out. So you pluck the D, and then the rest will shut down, and it'll show you the D's sharp
or
flat.
Oh, that's cool.
It's, yeah, same, $100 bucks, same as the Boss tuner, but
yeah.
It's...
a little faster.
Yes, very cool.
Nice.
Yeah, so... Oh, and then so you rock a Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What do you? How'd you end up with a Gibson?
I just, you know, I started. I realized I wanted a Gibson because Kevin Stowe was my roommate. Who? You
oh,
know.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
That's how I found out who you were.
There we go.
He had your CD. Your last
I like
CD
Kevin
there.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And he, I remember he came back from that Passim show and you had done Standing in the Shadow of Kevin Stowe that you had written on the spot, like written just before the show.
Yes.
And I was like, who is this guy? This is awesome.
I used to be something.
So I knew of you for years before
right.
we actually met. But he always had Gibsons and he had them around the house and I would pick them up and play. I love them. I just, and especially with the finger picking style.
Okay.
The old Gibsons are just my favorite.
Yeah. It would make perfect sense. If somebody, if you walked into my guitar store if I could get past my anger of having the fact that I'm working in a guitar store and my dreams have been shattered, I would probably point you towards a Gibson. So, and then I'd tell you about my band so it wouldn't be creepy when I hit on you later.
You give me the flyer.
Yeah. Here, you know, I don't know if you're in town, but my band, we're playing a really cool show, man. It's all improvisational. funky. So play us a song right. and get
Can
us
I
out of
here. Can I
play
you a new one since
I've
been
Yes, play whatever you want since I've been very
Speaking
demanding.
Speaking of tuning, I'm going to tune with the snark tuner
That's okay.
right now. I had a snark for about 5 minutes and then I broke it.
Okay.
I put it in my bag and I broke it. I can't have clip-on tuners.
Really? Because, yeah, you...
I can't have nice things.
I can't have nice things.
They're too delicate. You can edit this out, right?
No, we're leaving the tuning in.
I'm gonna play a new one.
Yes.
All right.
Please do.
Let me make sure that's... Yeah. All those coffee stained thank you cards that never got sent. I put them in a bar. Dug a hole in the yard behind the fence, and I buried him with a dog. But I swear last night that I heard zombies at the door saying you're welcome very much in a sarcastic tone. Unchecked to do, crumpled up, forgotten souls, they groan. They groaned, oh, 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 there's nowhere to hide. You can't run from yourself. There's no escape from the inside. You're buried by the bell. Walls don't know my name. Familiar faces rose like ghosts from hell, smothered me in shame. They said it was me who put that hurt look in their eyes, and then they lifted up the rug and showed me my sins. Translucent, blurry shapes of vague sound and cries. I said, you win. You win. Oh, oh, oh. There's nowhere to hide. You can't run from yourself. There's no escape from the inside. You're buried by the bed.
It has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. This went smooth. I'm always sort of nervous when it's people that I don't have 20 years of backstory with. So I was like, what are we going to talk about? But it turns out we talked about plenty.
Yeah. It was pretty
so,
easy.
Yeah. So this was Rhymes Against Humanity with Adam Brodsky. My name is Adam Brodsky. We're going to play us out. And we are going to let her go. She has a gig tonight in Riverton. And then a big old blues thing with Mark T. Small, is that his
Mark
name?
T. Small,
Mark
yeah.
Mark T. Small.
August 17th.
Yes, that would have been my mom's birthday, but instead it's just a day now. So thanks for joining me. I have no idea who the guest will be next week, but it'll be somebody, or maybe not. Maybe it'll be nobody.